WYBC New Haven.
I remember when I was really young, I had this thing about rescuing bugs that were in the house, and my mom was like dead set against it. Dead set. She hates spiders. It's like a passion of hers. And there was this spider that was like crawling around, and I was like, I'll take care of it. And mom was like, if you let that spider get away rather than killing it, if you let it get away, I will never let you save another spider again for the rest of your life. And the spider got away. And so I was like, what do I do? What do I do? You know, and my, like, you know, 5-year-old, like, moral compass was, like, going crazy here. You know, like, lie to mom, kill all spiders, lie to mom, kill all spiders. I ended up lying, and it was, like, blatantly obvious. Because, like, when you're 5 years old, you know, if you lie, it's, like, pretty, you know, pretty out there. But apparently my mom ended up feeling worse about it in the end than I did.
I mean, have you guys talked about it?
Yeah, no, we've talked about it since then. Yeah, but, yeah, that was just... That's like the one, like, one of the seminal lies of my life that I remember.
Speaking of the truth, I like to hear them once in a while. And I'll even listen to all your vanity. Utter lies are like butterflies. They just both die in a couple of days. Show me all your proof, put it right in front of my eyes, and I'll even listen to all your vanity. Utter lies are like butterflies, they just both die in a couple of days.
And what's in me? Welcome to the Radley Porch. I'm Rachel Haverford.
And I'm Maudie Atkinson. This week, we've gathered some friends together on our porch to talk about the lies we tell.
First, we talk about the lies we tell, seemingly for no reason at all.
And then we discuss the lies we tell to protect ourselves, including our own delusions.
And finally, we talk about why we lie at all and what it means.
The Autistic Narrator and the Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime by Mark Haddon cannot tell lies. He says, "A lie is when you say something happened which didn't happen. But there is only ever one thing which happened at a particular time in a particular place. And there are an infinite number of things which didn't happen at that time and at that place. And if I think about something which didn't happen, I start thinking about all the other things which didn't happen." So why are we sometimes tempted to talk about these things that didn't happen?
Well, I think part of it is, like, the fact that people are programmed to believe you're telling the truth. My brother was starting high school, and... he was like, there's this girl next sitting next to him in history class, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I'm a French exchange student, I'm staying with this host family, and blah blah blah." And she's like, "Oh, you're a French exchange..." And he, like, didn't speak any French at all, and, like, clearly has an American accent, and, like, lived 2 blocks from the school. But it's just, like, I mean, one, maybe she was a little gullible, but also, you're like, if people tell you something, you're programmed to believe they're not randomly lying.
I had a similar story, just, like, irrational lying. I mean, I was, like, 6 years old, and I went to this, like, daycare thing, like, after school, and for some reason, like, it wasn't even, like, a jealousy thing, like, everyone else had a dog, and I didn't have a dog. I just sort of pretended that I had a dog, and I, like, started inventing all these stories about my dog, and it was, like, a golden retriever, his name was, like, Butterscotch, and, you know, like, I was like, "Oh, I'm so excited, I'm gonna go home and play with Butterscotch," and all the cats were like, "Oh, no," and,
it's like an imaginary friend.
One day my mom came in and, like, they somehow it came up and they were like, "What do you mean, like, you don't have a dog?" And she was like, "No, we don't have a dog." And so, I in this moment of mortification, like, I think, like, this is where, like, my compulsive lying was born. And, like, I just, I was like, "Oh, it's like an imaginary dog." And, like, I play with it, like, you know, I think they thought this was really cute, but I just felt, like, completely mortified as a 6-year-old that I had been trapped in this lie. And
but that's the best part about lies, right? When you get trapped. Or it's funny when other people get to see it, not when you're necessarily trapped.
I would watch someone else, like, squirm.
Yeah. Or maybe that's just horrible.
Maybe there's some, like, sick pleasure. But when you get away with a lie, that's really good. And it never comes back to bite you.
This is one of my strongest memories about elementary school, which is saying a lot because I have some very strong memories, is what grade was it? It was third grade, all right? Third grade. And this is a case where I didn't lie, but everyone thought I had lied, and they accused me of it. So when I was really little, I really liked to eat. and most people do. But anyway, I really, really like blueberry muffins, okay, for some reason. So one day my family made blueberry muffins and let them to cool overnight, right? And the next morning, my parents came downstairs and looked at the muffins, and the tops had all been, like, nibbled out. and they were like, Kate, did you eat the blueberry muffins? And I was like, no, I did not eat the blueberry muffins, because I had not eaten the blueberry muffins, and you must understand this. So, but they were, you know, they were trying to teach me lying's bad. So they sat me down and like, Kate, we know you ate the blueberry muffins and we don't want you to lie to us. And we don't care that you ate them, but we do care that you're lying. And I was so stuck because no matter what I said, they would not believe I did not eat the muffins. And at one point, there's like, you can't go to school until you stop lying and admit that you took the tops off the muffins. I was like, I don't know what it was. It wasn't me. Maybe it was Anne. My sister was really little at the time. She probably couldn't even walk, right? It was like, our cat. Like, our cat did not eat muffins. And in the end, I finally was like, maybe it was a mouse, right? And they're like, okay, Kate, we've hurt you so badly. You would have given in by now, right? And it turns out we had rats coming out of our stoves eating muffins.
Oh my God.
I was so traumatized about this muffin thing. And oh, the best part is, later in fourth grade, I wrote a story about it, and my teacher thought I made up the story. I am not kidding. She's like, this is supposed to be a true story about your life.
So what are some of the lies you guys have actually told?
The lie I feel the worst about was, like, I didn't mean to lie originally. It was like, we were in high school, and I was standing talking to a group of friends, and this really socially awkward kid came up, and he was like, what are you talking about, or something, and someone was like, oh, Turkmenistan, I don't even remember how it started, someone said, oh, Turkmenistan, and I was like, yeah, I'm moving to Turkmenistan, and he was like, what, really, and I was like, yeah, my dad got a job there, and then he was convinced that, like, my dad was a spy, and I was lying about that, just saying my dad was, like, a businessman or something, which my dad is a lawyer, but And then I just, like, couldn't stop and be like, no, I'm just kidding. We weren't talking about Turkmenistan. And so for, like, the longest time after that, he'd be like, when are you leaving for Turkmenistan? Like, when? And then, like, a month later, he came up to me and he was like, you're not moving to Turkmenistan, are you? And I was like, no, sorry about that.
But why do you feel bad about that lie? I don't know. It just seems like a rather, like, I don't know.
Because...
like me, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's, like, taking advantage of that. Of that capability, or of the, like, inherent tendency to believe people are telling the truth.
And you don't even need to protect yourself. Like, sometimes you need to lie. You know, like it's good to lie.
So have you guys ever lied to law enforcement or anything?
I have. So, the summer after freshman year, I went home, and it was, like May 2005, I guess, and I was hanging out with, like, my three really good friends from high school, and it was, like, the first time we'd seen each other in a really long time, and so you think you'd have all these, like, really interesting things to say, like, all these stories to swap or whatever, but it was really just, like, we had nothing to say to each other. Like, it was one of, like, the most awkward silences ever, and, like, these are people that, like, I would spend all my time with in high school, and then to have nothing to say to each other was a very strange experience. So we were watching this, like, NBA playoff game, and then that, like, ended, and so it was like 11:30 at night, and we're hanging out in my friend Drew's basement, and we're like, oh, okay, like, I guess we should go home, like, good to see everybody, you know, and I'm like, for some reason I, like, refused to let this happen, like, and we were all sort of conscious, like, we were joking awkwardly about how we had nothing to say to each other, and so I was like, why don't we just, like, I'm hungry, let's go to, like, Taco Bell, you know, because, like, Taco Bell closes at midnight, and I really wanted a burrito, and so we go there. And so, I get my burrito, and then we're sitting in the parking lot, and it's, like, the same thing happens again, and we're just, like...
Awkward silence.
Like, we cannot go back to Drew's house. And so we all start throwing out our ideas and about what to do. And, Drew and Charlie, it was, like, my friend Drew, Charlie, and Chris. And, Drew and Charlie live in the same town, which is, like, this random town in New Jersey. And, Drew was like, oh, let's go to the old mill, which is this, like, old recycling plant, and none of us could think of anything better, and so we all refused to go back to Drew's house. We're just, okay, let's go to the old mill. And so we go there, and it's like you drive up this long driveway, and there's this huge parking lot at the end, and there's all these recycling bins, like these huge dumpsters everywhere. And so we're just like, it's like midnight, you know, 12:15 now, we're just like, okay, this is great. So everyone was like, great idea, Drew, and he was like, whatever, I'm sorry, nobody suggested anything better. And so Chris starts doing like spins in his car, and like, you know, like, flashing his lights, honking. It was just, like, bored suburban kids, you know, with nothing better to do. And so, we're about to leave, and we're about to go down the driveway when we see this other car come up the driveway, like the really long driveway, and like sort of come up beside us. And so it's a cop car, and he's like, what are you boys doing? And so like we're all in my friend Chris's black SUV, and so he doesn't get out of the car, but he just pulls up alongside us, and he's like, what are you boys doing? And Chris is like, he like turns back, he's like, what are we doing? And I'm like, oh, we're lost, you know? And Chris is like, oh, we're lost, officer. And the cop is like, well, what are you looking for? And Chris is like, what are we looking for? And I was like, I don't know. And my friend Charlie, who's like a bit of a psychopath, he yells out his own address in this town. He's like, 9 Indian Drive, you know, like in like a very loud voice. So, and the cop is like, what? And Chris is like, I think we're looking for 9 Indian Drive. And Charlie just keeps yelling, he's like, 9 Indian Drive, 9, like almost like with a rhythm. And and the cop like suddenly becomes like very sympathetic. He's like, oh, you're looking for 9 Indian Drive, you know, because it's very easy to get end up at the old mill if you're looking for Charlie's house. Like, like there's one turn you miss, and you know. So he's like, oh, you make a left when you come out of the driveway, and you make another left and right. And we're like, oh, thank you, officer. And Charlie is like playing this whole thing up. He's like, thank you, officer. Is that by the temple? When of course, like Charlie knows his house is like right next to the Jewish temple. And the cop's like, yep, by the temple. All right, boys, have a good night. And so we're like, so the cop like pulls out of the driveway first, and he like makes a left. And then I guess out of his rearview mirror, he must have seen us make a right. And so I think he was a little suspicious at that point. And so we didn't, why would we go to Charlie's house? You know, we just came from Drew's house. What was the point? And so we like turn in the opposite direction, and we're going the completely wrong way. And so maybe like half an hour to 45 minutes later, we like circle back around to like this point where you would have to turn in to get to Charlie's house. And the cop is like planted at that intersection waiting for us. And so we turn, and then we see him drive off. And so we are like, who does he think he is? You know, like, we have, like, made ourselves an enemy, and, like, we must repay him for this insult that he has delivered to us. I don't know, we all became, you know, like, these chivalrous warriors at this point. I don't really understand what happened, what the transformation that occurred. But, yeah, so we were all sort of, it was now, like, 1:30, and we had, like, figured out, you know, like, our mission. Like, this was our mission for the evening, was to mess with this cop. This, like, one cop in this random town in New Jersey on, like, a Tuesday night at 1:30 in the morning in the middle of May. We were going to make his life miserable in, like, the most legal way possible. And so we started, like, throwing out our best ideas to sort of mess with him. And I suggested that we all, like, we go back to the old mill and we, like, start, like, honking and doing everything again, like, spinning the car and, like, flashing the lights. And we get him to drive up again, and we're like, oh, thank God you're here, we got lost again, you know, like, can you give us directions again, we really don't know where we're going. But, and like, everyone had other ideas, and so I think we settled on my friend, it was either Drew or Chris, I forget who suggested it, but that we would all get out of Chris's black SUV and go into my friend Drew's Honda Civic. And we would all switch places in the car, so Drew would be driving some Chris, and, you know, I would be in like the back seat, but on the other side, and Charlie would be in the front seat. And so we would find the cop again and sort of pretend like we didn't know what was happening. Like, and he would like be like, he would think there was something funny going on. And so we get in the car, and we're all very excited, we're all like giggling a little bit, and we sort of like pull up to various places. Like, we sit in this church parking lot for a while, and we're like, no, this is dead. Like, he's not going to show up. He's not going to show up. And we, like, keep moving. So finally we're in, like, a 7-Eleven parking lot. And it's, like, 2:30 in the morning now. This has been a very long night. And so we're, like, we're about to leave when we see this car, like, coming over the hill. And we're like, is it him? Is it him? And then the flashing lights come on. And we're like, okay, everybody, like, game bases. And I was, like, freaking out because I'm, like, a very nervous person. And my friend Charlie was like, Charlie was calming me down. He's like, Neil, this is a good experience. Like, lying to cops is a very valuable skill. Like, we need to practice it. If we're not doing anything wrong, we're just telling a little bit, we're telling a little lie. Like, we haven't, like, committed any crimes. And he's like, what's he going to get us for? Lying? So the cop, like, this time he gets out of the car and he, like, walks up. And he's like, what are you boys doing? It's the same cop. He's like, what are you boys doing? And my friend Drew, in like a moment of brilliance, is like, we're just hanging out. And the cop, like, he's like, I'm sorry, what? And Drew's like, yeah, we're just hanging out. You know, like, my mom, we were hanging out at my house. My mom was like, oh, you boys are being too loud. Can you go somewhere else? And, like, long story short, here we are. And the cop was like, do you live in this town, son? And Drew's like, oh, yeah, I live in this town. 18 Rose Avenue, it's, like, you know, right down the street. And, he's like, well, do your friends? And Drew's like, he mentions to Charlie, he's like, well, he lives in this town, but they live in, like, you know, the other towns. And so he changes light in on Charlie. He's like, where do you live, son? And Charlie, like, is like, his loudest, clearest voice. This story wouldn't have happened without Charlie. He's like, his loudest, clearest voice is like, I live at 9 Indian Drive, officer. And the cop, like, almost, like, drops his flashlight. He's like, I'm sorry, what? He's like, Charlie's like, I live at 9 Indian Drive. By the temple? And, the cop, like, suddenly, like, swings around on, like, me, and he's like, you were in that car! And I'm like, what car? And he's like, and he swings around on Chris, like, you were driving that car! Chris is like, what are you talking about? And, he's like, everybody out of the car! Everybody out of the car! And he, like, pulls us all out, and he, like, lines us up, and he frisks us, and he, like, takes out our IDs, and he, like, checks our driver's license, our IDs, and it's like Harvard, Columbia, Cornell, Yale, and he's like, you boys all go to really good schools. And he's like, you boys don't know anything about, like, four other boys in a black SUV, like, about, like, 2 hours ago at the old mill looking for your house. And he's like, and we're like, no, officer, no. And he's like, he keeps, like, focusing on Charlie. He's like, you don't know anything. They were looking for your house. And Charlie is like, I've never seen anyone, like, I was, like, sweating a little bit. Like, Charlie was so calm, like, and collected in the moment. He was like, the cop was like, you don't know anything about four boys looking for your house? And Charlie was like, I don't know, officer. I have a lot of friends. People are coming and going into my house all the time. You know, he was like, the cop was like, what the hell is going on? And so he seriously stood us there for, like, it felt like half an hour. And so he just kept asking us the same question over and over again. Like, it was this, he clearly had no idea how to interrogate people. He just kept going to Charlie and being like, you don't know anything about four kids in a black SUV, one of whom looks a lot like him. And Charlie was like, maybe you're looking for my friend Akil, Indian kid, you know, and then maybe, like, Sam and Sean were with him. I don't know, officer. I have a lot of friends. I'm sorry. We're all just home from college and we're just catching up. And the cop is just like, he's like, he kept shaking his head and being like, you boys, go the f*** home. And I don't want to see four boys in any car for the rest of this night. And so, of course, like, we didn't go home, but, like, we didn't mess with them anymore, because we were like, we've tempted fate enough. And so we just went to, like, a diner, and we relived the whole thing. And so, yeah, we just, like, we imagined that this cop, like, because of our lie or whatever, was, like, going back to the station talking about, like, ghost cars running around this random town in New Jersey.
So he just let you go? He was like, okay,
he was
bye?
I think part of it was like, well, what can I charge them with? You know, like, switching cars and showing, like, I think part of him must have known.
Lying to an officer. Are you just lying in court?
Yeah.
Lying to an officer is okay.
Yeah.
But how much do you think that story or, like, those events came out of the fact, like, you guys, it was, like, that awkward thing that you couldn't say anything to each other. And so you were like, we have to make something.
Oh, yeah. Way. Like, I think we totally all, like, we need to have an adventure right now. And we still relive it. Like, when there's nothing to say, we're like, oh, remember that time when.
So is that what lying, like, what does lying come from? Like, does it come from need or, like, joy?
I think sometimes, I mean, I think, all, like, lots of different reasons. Sometimes you lie because, like, you, like, don't want to say the truth. This is probably not what Neil and his friends were.
I mean, there's a thrill about it, you know.
Right. But, like, once I remember lying, it was senior year of high school, and my family was, like, seriously considering moving to Cleveland. And so we were all flying out to look at, like, schools and houses, and my dad was going to, like, go through the final round of interviews for this job. And so, like, but, like, I didn't want to talk about it with any of my friends. So I, like, the day before, at the end of, like, the end of school day, I was, like, started to act like I was sick. Like, I was, like, oh, putting my head down on the desk and being, like, oh, I'm feeling sick, which was, like, totally not feeling sick at all. And so then the next day, I, like, missed school, and then the day after that, I came in late, and so I was, like, yeah, you know, I felt sick, so my mom, you know, had me stay home for a couple hours, but then she let me come in late, which was, like, totally a lie. Like, we had flown to Cleveland and stayed in a hotel and looked at schools and...
See, that just means it'd be easier.
Because then you don't have to, like, tell them, like, oh, I'm thinking of moving, because, like, it wasn't certain, so you're not ready to, like, talk about things yet. And but still, it was kind of touching. I had one friend who eventually, when I told him, like, so we didn't end up moving to Cleveland. So when I told him, like, oh, like, that day when I said I was sick, like, I was really in Cleveland, he was like, oh, yeah, I kind of wondered about that, because, like, I drove by your house on the way to school, and, like, none of your cars were there, and then I called, and, like, you guys didn't pick up, and so, like, I kind of felt like you weren't at home sick. But I didn't say anything. So I was kind of touched to, like, be caught in the lie. I mean, even if I wasn't, like, ready to, like, tell the truth then. Unlike other guys. Why would you lie about how much coal you had? Why would you lie about something dumb like that? Why would you lie about anything at all? First the window, then into the wall. Listening to The Radley Porch on Yale Radio 1340.
So Rachel's last story was about a lie to protect herself. What lies have you guys told to protect yourself?
My first sentence was a lie.
What?
The first sentence I was able to say was, he did it, with reference to my older brother. And he usually hadn't done it, but I would blame him for it every time.
Do you know what he did?
Everything. Anything that I did, I would blame it on him. I'd say, he did it. It's the first sentence I could make.
Still, don't you have a story about lying to protect yourself? The one about the hookah?
Yeah, so I was, it was like, oh, I feel like all these stories happen to Charlie. so we went to this, it was like right before junior year of college, and it was like my parents had gone to Italy for like this vacation, and he was like, oh, let's go to a party at Columbia, because he goes to Columbia and Yale hadn't started yet. And so we go there, and he neglected to mention that it was just, like, freshmen who had moved in and, like, no upperclassmen were there. So we're at this, like, random frat party with all these freshmen. It was, like, their first day of college, and I was like, this is not fun, Charlie. And so we left, and sort of somehow we wandered into this other frat, and I didn't even know there were frats at Columbia, but... the president of this frat turned out to be Charlie's freshman year roommate, who, like, they didn't live together sophomore year, but they still, like, were, like, friendly, and he was like, oh, Charlie, it's good to see you, and Charlie was like, oh, Beryl, hey, how's it going? And so we ended up, like, hanging out there, and there was, like, they had, like, a case of beer, and so, like, they had, like, a hookah, and so I had, like, smoked hookah before, but, like, never really sort of for that prolonged a period. It was, like, a six-hour session, and so, like, by the end of it, like, I felt like a little sick, and so, like, I don't think I was doing it right, so so the next morning, I was, like, we went home, and I wake up at, like, 2 in the afternoon, and I'm just, like, driving somewhere, and I, like, start having these, like, chest pains, and I'm having, like, shortness of breath, and I have to pull over, and I'm, like, oh, God, what's happening? And so I call my brother, and my brother is a doctor, but he lived in Philadelphia at this point, he lives in New York now, but I was like, hey, so I was smoking the hookah, and now I'm having these, like, chest pains and shortness of breath. Like, I'm a little freaked out. Should I be concerned? He's like, no, it's probably just, like, inflammation of your lungs. It'll go away in, like, a couple of days. Don't worry about it. Like, it's probably just that your lungs are irritated from the smoke. You probably took in too much smoke. And he was like, but just in case, like, it's not something more serious, I want you to go get checked out. And so he was like, is there anyone who can check you out? And, like, usually my pediatrician is, like, my dad's best friend, and so he had gone to Italy, like, my dad, and, like, it was, like, a triple date to Italy, so, like, my dad and his two best friends and, like, their wives had all gone on this vacation, and,
nice triple date.
Yeah, a nice triple date. And so my dad is, like, he's, like, gonna retire really soon, and so he has hired these, like, he's a pediatrician, and he's hired these two very young, like, eager doctors, like, straight out of residency to, like, compete for his practice, like, Dr. Lewis and Dr. Paul. And so my brother was like, oh, well, why don't you just go to Dad's office, and, like, they can check you out. Just, like, and I was like, do I have to tell him I was smoking a hookah? He's like, no, it'll be fine. Just, like, they'll be able to tell just by, like, they won't be able to tell each other, like, I just want them to check there's, like, nothing more serious. And so, I go there, and, like, they're both, like, clear, like, the entire afternoon of appointments to, like, check me out. And they're like, hi, it's so good to finally meet you. Like, I hadn't met either of them before. And so they were like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, I'm just having some chest pain. You know, and they was like, really? Chest pain? And they do all these tests, and they check me out for, like, 45 minutes. And so I don't mention anything about the hookup. And so they were just like, my parents are very conservative, so this is why I didn't mention it. Like, no smoking, no drinking, nothing. And so they're like, this is very odd. Like, it doesn't seem to appear, there doesn't appear to be any lasting damage. Like, I think because I, like, and they talked to my brother, and my brother, like, didn't say anything about the hookah. So I think it was hard for them to figure out that I had inflammation in my lungs because they were like, do you smoke? And I was like, no, I don't smoke. And
because you are, that would be confusing. Yeah.
And so they were like really like puzzling over it. And so they called me back, like I guess they called my brother, and my brother calls me up like laughing hysterically, and he's like, guess what they think you have? guess what they think you have? And he was like, and so I was like, they think you had a panic attack. Like, they think you're having, like, a nervous breakdown.
So they tell your parents
They
that?
Called my dad in Italy.
And I feel like that's
like,
much worse.
It was like, Dr. Lewis was like, hi. So your son came in, and Dr. Paul and I talked it over, and we think he had a minor panic attack. And my dad, like, totally believed it because I'm, like, a very nervous person. And so they were just like, are you okay? Has it happened again? And I was like, no, it hasn't happened again. And they're like, good. You should go, like, meditate. And I was like, okay, I will.
I was in Turkey the first summer I was there, and the first weekend we were at this huge, like, yacht they had rented out, and it was, like, a club on the yacht. Like, goodness knows. But there were all these heels, like, the first weekend, this guy, I was talking to him, and after a while, he was like, can I have your cell phone number? And I was like, I don't have a cell phone. Which was just, like, not true. Like, I mean, I did, but you just don't give your number to people. Like, this isn't how, I mean, I wouldn't do it in America, but I certainly wouldn't do it there. I was like, I don't have something. He's like, well, how am I going to find you again? I was like, well, it's like fate. It's like, I'm like Cinderella. Like, if you find me, like, it's meant to be. If not, you know. And Istanbul is a city of, you know, 15 million, probably more like 25 if it could really take everyone. So, like, didn't think this was a problem, but it actually gets really small if you, like, are the same sort of type of age and all of that stuff. So the next weekend, I was out on a blind date, actually, double date with, like, really just chaperoning my friend. And I hear Jill, like, really loudly in the street. And I was like, what's this? Like, not a Turkish name. And I turn around, and it's this guy. And I was like, oh my god. Thankfully, he was, like, tactful enough not to bring up the whole Cinderella reference. And, like, try to get my number again. Plus, I was standing next to a guy who was, like, looking menacing. And, you know, stop talking to my date kind of situation. But still, that could happen.
There's also, like, lies for your own good. We had a long debate about a friend of mine who cheated on her fiancé. Multiple times in the same weekend while visiting me. Anyway, it's a long story. But she recently, this happened over the summer, and she recently called him. So that's, what, like 6 months later? And he's in Canada, and told him all this stuff, that she cheated on him. Like,
were they still engaged?
Still engaged. Told him all about it. And, like, we had this whole debate, she wasn't there, about whether she should have told him. Because on the one hand, like, honesty is good, especially if you think you're going to get married, which at the age of 21 is stupid, but whatever, like... Honesty is a good idea, but at a certain point, like, is that just sort of selfish? I mean, some people felt that that was sort of selfish. Like, you made it your conscious decision. You did it once. Like, I mean, you did it a couple times with different people. It wasn't like it was an affair. You know, you claim it didn't mean anything. You claim you've moved on from it. And so if you're telling someone, is that because, you know, you're so guilty that you want to push it off on someone else? Like, oh, now I don't have to feel guilty anymore because I've been honest. But, like, what does that really get you? I mean, it just hurts his feelings and makes him feel bad about himself. And it doesn't, so in theory, it doesn't change the status of relationships. So we have a lot of.
But if you were in his point of view, like, would you want to know if you were engaged to someone who cheated on you?
Yeah, of course I would. I have a different point of view. I'd want to know, but I'd also want to know right away. I mean, I think there is a difference to waiting 6 months and, like, nothing else has happened since, and you're just like, oh, P.S., like, I feel like I should share this with you. As opposed to saying, you know, right away if someone calls you and says, you know, I made a mistake, then that's different.
if you cheat on someone, don't tell them. That just makes it worse.
I agree with you on that, actually. And it helps. I feel like something self-indulgent about telling people, like it makes yourself feel better, but it makes the other person feel worse. I don't think you should have cheated in the first place, I'm just saying.
I think maybe you don't tell them after that.
Yeah. My boyfriend is listening to this.
You should be honest.
Yeah, Emma.
Like, if they catch you...
Yeah, I never thought about that. That's really... That's actually a really tough question.
The reason people confess and if they're going to plan on continuing the relationship is to get it off of their shoulders and make themselves feel better.
Exactly.
And if they're not gonna
that's self-indulgent.
Well, but don't you think there's something
you
said? Because,
right,
like...
You have a right to know, maybe, but...
The right to know, and also, like... Maybe it'll, like, somehow come out at some point, and, like, isn't it better to, like... Don't you get, like... Isn't it better for the relationship and for everyone involved to think that there's, like, some sense of honesty and trust?
Right, but it's what they're saying, that that is still only for your own good, right? Because it'll
no,
make
no,
you
but I'm
look
saying,
worse.
I would like to, like, if someone broke up to me, broke up with me, and didn't, you know, whatever, I would feel justified to calling them mean names and thinking evil thoughts if they were a schmuck and told me that they'd been cheating on me, you know? Whereas if they were just nice and were like, we're done, I wouldn't, you know...
Yeah.
I don't know if that made any sense. But
so are you
no,
thinking
that
like, you want the chance to have the opportunity
no,
to call
I mean,
them
mean
names?
I would like to be told the truth.
Maybe it is better to come clean. It's not just for the sake of you, because, like, otherwise it will, like, infect things and just, like, become, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
if you're the kind of person
I don't think,
that
yeah.
couldn't handle it.
I think, well, I think I also have, like, a... like tremendous sense of guilt about like a lot of things. Like it's really easy for people to guilt trip me about things. So like for me,
good
like for me, like having things like coming clean about things is just like it's really hard for me to function when I like when I like have certain things on my conscience. Like it really is like a self-indulgent thing for me.
I lie awake at night to wait till you come in. You stay a little while and then you're gone again. Every question that I ask, I get a lie, lie, lie. Or every lie you tell, you're gonna cry, cry, cry. When your fickle love gets old.
Thanks for listening to The Radley Porch on WYBC New Haven, 1340 AM. If you have any comments, suggestions, or submissions, please contact us at theradleyporch@gmail.com. So how do you guys lie to yourselves?
What are they lying about, like? Members of the opposite sex, or members of the same sex, or people you're attracted to, is a very common. Very common.
Or, like, not seeing their flaws, or...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in relationships, there's a certain amount. I mean, that's how I feel, like, I'll be in a relationship with someone, like, oh, they are perfect. Like, seriously, this person is perfect. And then somehow I'll pass, and I'll be like, actually, remember when he used to do that? Because that was way annoying.
But is that a lie, or is that just, like...
Well, but see, sometimes you can overcompensate, too, though. Because it's like, on the one hand, maybe you were lying to yourself or deluding yourself when you're in the relationship. But then when you're out of the relationship, you can kind of go too far the other way.
Yeah,
like, oh, my gosh, you know, that was so annoying. When in actuality, like, maybe it wasn't that bad or didn't happen that often, but mm-hmm. in your mind it happened like every day, and clearly this should have been a sign from the beginning that
yeah.
it was a failure. I mean, like,
how
was
I so dumb, you know?
Yeah, those little like superstitions and like,
yeah.
if only I had known. Like,
yeah.
Are you very aware of the lies you tell as you're telling them to yourselves, or is it more retrospective?
I think I lie to myself in terms of my image of myself. Like how I think I am perceived and like how I like think my like what I look like and what how I act around certain people. Like I think I sort of have like a different image of that than what I know is the truth.
Is it a better image or
it's
worse?
It's better and worse, like in different ways.
Most of my lies to myself are like denial of like I know I have this amount of work to do, but if I just like, don't really think about it, which I don't know if that's a lie, but, like, if I don't think about it, then it doesn't exist.
I think this is the first year where I've ever... I still can't say it. But this is the first year where I think it began to sink in with me that maybe Santa wasn't really there, but... I kind of tend not to think about it. I mean, I know that sounds childish and unbelievable, but it's really the truth. It really does bother me. I remember sitting in my room over break thinking... yeah, so.
So did, like, one of your friends tell you when you were little there was no Santa, or just kind of gradually?
I don't think anybody's scar... I don't have a scarring experience on memory like that. I think some children must be really scarred when they hear that. I think I've always heard whispers about that, and I just chose not to believe it. I wrote my last letter, serious letter to Santa, in 10th grade. My mother intercepted it. I made the mistake of sending it with her to the post office. She was just, I actually ended up getting, I think, most things on the list, which I thought was, she didn't need to do that. I was writing a letter to Santa, and I really did it, though.
In a sense, when you're a kid, you're told lies all the time, right? Like, I think, like, adults like telling lies to kids to, like,
it's
get
funny.
A rise out of them. But also, like, the whole Tooth Fairy, Santa, like,
Easter Bunny,
they're all lies, right? And they're propagated by, like, adults, like, the advertising industry, like, a lot. And so, what was that moment like when you, like, figured out, like, your parents were lying to you? Or on some level, would lie to you?
I don't know, I never bought into the whole Santa Claus thing.
I'm Jewish, no, I got nothing. I was always the kid at, like, parties, my mom was like, no, don't say anything. Don't tell them.
The
like,
poor deluded children.
Yeah. But my parents did tell me, so we had a rabbit, you know, like, name was Bunny Girl. And so my parents were always like, okay, here's the thing, like, we're not Christian, but Bunny Girl is the Easter Bunny, so he brings us stuff. Like, he likes you guys, he'll leave you out, you know, because, like, he's the Easter Bunny. But, like, we never actually believed it, I don't think. Like, my parents were never, like, very convincing.
No, see, I actually believed in Santa Claus as a little kid, and for me, the moment I realized it wasn't true was in first grade. We were doing show and tell, and this kid had, like, this really cool illustrated atlas that he brought in, and, like, clearly the teacher wanted it for, like, a teaching tool, so she asked him, she's like, oh, Josh, where did you get it? And he was, like, all, like, cheesy grin. He was like, Santa Claus brought it for me. And then she was like, well, maybe you should ask your parents, because sometimes parents have a very special connection with Santa Claus. And I was like, what is this? Like, what is this special connection? So I went home that day and asked my mom. I was like, Mom, is Santa Claus real? And up to that point, like, I had never doubted that Santa Claus was real. And so she sat me down in, like, our hallway steps and was like, gave me a speech about, like, you know, like, Santa Claus is, like, an idea. It's the metaphor for the spirit of selfless giving and blah, blah, blah. And it was,
wow.
Like,
it
was a very beautiful story. I think she handled that one pretty well.
I think that story was going somewhere else. Like, the atlas is going to, like, turn to the North Pole and it's just ice, you know? Nothing there.
Where's Santa Claus?
But that's really,
But it didn't disturb you at all that your parents would, like... Well, because it's I guess you described it as not really a lie, but, like...
I mean, it did a little bit, because then... So, like, we didn't directly bring up the Tooth Fairy, you know? And so, like, by extension, I guess I kind of knew the Tooth Fairy wasn't real, but, like... Since we hadn't mentioned it, I wasn't 100% sure, so I would kind of, like, still try and make myself believe in that one.
So you
but,
didn't
like,
ask her, because then you'd get the truth.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I, like, thought of the Tooth... I guess I must have thought of the Tooth Fairy and Easter Bunny at the time, but I didn't bring it up. And so, like, you know, after that, I rationally pretty much knew they weren't real, but, like, you could delude yourself for a little bit.
I think my mom always told us, like, we were friends with, like, the Tooth Fairy and stuff, because she sewed us Tooth Fairy pillows, you know, and they had little, like, pockets in them for just for the teeth. You had to put it there. And so, like... We're like, all right, mama's got something going on. She did write. My brother wrote a letter to the Tooth Fairy once, and she wrote back to him. So, I don't know, but I don't remember having a traumatic experience with like any of those things.
Yeah.
I do remember traumatizing Sophie once by trying to talk to her about it. It's probably having a Christian best friend, you know. But,
so she was just like, no, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, or something like that, or like you're wrong. You just wouldn't know.
Okay, lies to professors.
I lie all the time to professors.
Right, you were saying the other day, right?
Yeah.
That like, you feel better lying.
I wouldn't lie about, like, you know, like, no, honestly, I didn't plagiarize this, or, like, I wouldn't plagiarize it in the first place, but, like, I would not, like...
Not
I
a
don't
big
say,
lie.
I don't say, like, honestly, your class is too boring and I slept through it yesterday. I would say, like, oh, I was feeling a little bit sick. Or, like, but, you know, those are, like, lies, like, they help everybody.
Yeah, but that goes into, like, lies that you think are okay or justified.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, I just justified the whole... students or
yeah.
I lie to myself and I justify
that
all the time.
I think truth is overvalued. Like, I don't think that truth is always good. Really.
There are definitely lies that are justified, I think.
Like, what kind of
lies? I mean, like you said, like, lies that help everybody out, that, like, where you can actually, like, make everyone feel better by lying.
But sometimes they're unnecessary. Like, you probably could have been like, sorry, I wasn't in class.
like, and not even give them a reason.
You know, well, if they say, why weren't you in class?
No, I always want to give a reason.
So, I know, this is where I've been conflicted, and I've kind of changed my attitude recently. What do you guys think about, if you turn in a paper late, is it better just saying, sorry, I turned my paper late? Or is it better to say, even if it's not lying, or if it is, like, I was sick, I couldn't turn it in? Because, to some extent, do they believe that at all?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think you get credit if you just say, sorry, my paper's late, rather than be coming off as, like, the whiny person who, like, has some excuse. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
like,
I think... But you could go the other way, too, right?
Wait, this is if you don't actually have the illness.
It doesn't matter. To the other person, they don't know.
I don't know. I think honesty is important. I think if you had the illness, you say you had an illness. If you didn't have an illness, you just, like...
And you ruin it for other people, too, right?
Yeah.
If everyone says they have an illness, and when, like, you really do, then you're screwed.
However, at college, when one person gets sick, like, 50 people get sick, so...
Yeah.
If you're sick, chances are that someone else is sick too, and like you do both have to tell the same lie, the same, you know, excuse.
I think sometimes I feel like, or just like hearing, like sometimes when other people like are like telling the truth to professors, like sometimes I feel like there's something like sort of disrespectful about like you were saying, like if you were like, oh, I'm sorry, like slept through your class. Like I hate when other people tell professors like, oh, I'm sorry, I slept through your class, because like I feel, it just like feels so disrespectful, even if it's like completely the truth and they just don't want to lie. It just like makes me like really like.
But, like, if you're telling the person the truth and they can actually do something about the lectures, like, would that be better off? Or is everyone...
I feel like the chance of that happening is very
small.
Like, the chance of a class...
Professor being like, my class is boring?
Or at least they'll try harder.
No. Maybe. Yeah. I'm sure they... Yeah. Maybe.
We think you're an idealist.
Plato justifies lies in the Republic.
Yeah, I was going to bring in Kant.
Yeah.
Well, bring in Kant.
Well, no, like the categorical imperative, you know.
That makes no sense to me.
I mean, I think it's crap, but like it's a theory.
Wait, how does Plato justify?
So Plato justifies lies from the ruler his polis. Like if it's lies that the ruler needs to tell to maintain order and to make society more efficient, then they're justified lies.
Oh, but that.
So that's fine for the ruler, right? Like, in that world, because then they're supposed to be, like, for the better good, and there's one person to do that. But in our society today, like, me thinking, oh, this is making the world a little better, and I can justify this. But if we all do this, then what kind of world have we constructed?
Us, one with where the sovereignty of the people, you know?
Yeah, but just to say that you have good judgment about what is okay to lie about, what's, like, for the good of other people. People don't want truth. People think they want the truth, they don't want the truth.
People can't
handle it. So this is what Plato actually had to say about rulers lying in the Republic. Again, truth should be highly valued. If, as we were saying, a lie is useless to the gods and useful only as medicine to men, then the use of such medicine should be restricted to physicians. Private individuals have no business with them. Clearly not, he said. Then, if anyone at all is to have the privilege of lying, the rulers of the state should be the persons, and they, in their dealings either with the enemies or with their own citizens, may be allowed to lie for the public good. But nobody else should meddle with anything of the kind. And although the rulers have this privilege, for a private man to lie to them in return is to be deemed a more heinous fault than for the patient or the pupil of a gymnasium not to speak the truth about his own bodily illness to the physician or to the trainer. Or for a sailor not to tell the captain what is happening about the ship and the rest of the crew and how things are going with himself or his fellow sailors.
In that same vein, I'm starting to grapple with this now. Is it now, you know, when you're younger, when you write a paper for a class, you don't have to necessarily believe what you're writing. Because it's all about learning how to craft an argument using evidence. You can find all the quotes and stuff, and you can create a great paper that you don't believe.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, like, okay, you're going to start publishing. You really have to believe what you're saying. You can't just omit the quotes that don't make sense. You can't omit the documents that don't fit into your
You have to make the strongest argument for your side.
But that's right. But then there's a whole question of, if you doubt at all, is it lying to promote your way as your belief? Does that make sense at all?
I mean, speaking from, like, a political standpoint here, there's, like... You know, there's, like, sometimes there's a question of, like, oh, you know, like, what candidate do you support? Or, you know, like, what policy do you support? Like, if you were, like, a decision maker, you know, like, and you had, like, to decide between policies, once you've decided on a policy, I think you're totally legit in only making the case for whatever it is that you've decided on, you know, however it is that you're...
In politics, but at the same time, is it lying to, you know, if you know better, and even if you're really good at arguing, if you know that maybe you could be wrong, is it lying?
You don't have to make the case for the other side. There are other people who will do that.
But what happens if no one will? It's your paper that you're publishing. Right. It's your book that you're writing. So it's not only going on your name. You might be written down as a great writer or a great thinker.
I think what happened, though, is, like, if you don't believe your own argument, there has to be a convincing reason for you, at least, that the other side is true. And if you just ignore that and publish, like, what you're publishing, somebody else is going to mention it. And so you won't ever become a great writer because... Yeah. This huge hole in your argument will just be picked apart immediately.
Yeah. I was reading
Mill. If it occurs to you, it's going to occur to somebody else.
Yeah. I was reading Mill the other day, and he does, like, a really good job. He makes the arguments for the other side as convincingly as they could be made. Most people who, like, make arguments for, you know, their opponents, like, set up sham arguments. You know, like, some people will accuse us of, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's clearly not true. You know, Mill actually goes through and he, like, you know, here's what, you know, like, here's the arguments against this, you know, and makes them in a very convincing fashion and then says, but they're still wrong. And the fact that he's made those arguments in such a convincing fashion and yet still doesn't believe them, like, that's more evident, like, that's more convincing to me, because it shows that he clearly knows why he could be wrong and still doesn't think he's wrong.
Porch on Yale Radio AM 1340. If you have any comments or questions or suggestions for future shows, you can contact us at theradleyporch@gmail.com. That's theradleyporch@gmail.com. So guys, why do you think you tell lies?
I'd go to school and it'd be clearly obvious that I got a haircut. Like, I wouldn't have bangs and then I'd have bangs the next day. And people would be like, oh, did you get a haircut? I'd be like, no. What are you talking about? Of course I didn't. I don't know why I lied about it. It's just something I had to do.
Maybe it's just like a moment of like self-preservation. Like the first time when you can like get caught. And you're just like...
You're like, no, I didn't break that, Mom.
Yeah, like... Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's something switched on in my head, but it's just a moment of like... I did something wrong, but there's a way to conceal it.
Or irritation. Like, I feel like I have lied to people like, did you get a haircut? It's like, well, duh, like, you idiots. Like, no, I didn't. You know, like, at least it's like, you're not serious. But then people are like, oh, wait, you didn't? Like, you know, like, confused. But it's not necessarily like the conscious.
The difference between lies and deceit. Because I always thought it was an interesting distinction. Because, like, is it not as bad to just not tell someone something that you should? Or, like, give a partial answer that's not a lie, but just omits
but that's
very
like...
crucial information? Like, this.
Right, so that's what Othello is basically about, right? Like, he does very little outright lying, but is mostly, like pointing people in certain ways. And, and that his hands technically are clean, but, like...
But they're not.
They're definitely not.
Well, I had this argument once with my friend Chris, actually. And this is, like, I'm going to tell a really stupid story to preface it. And it's just, like, it's not a very interesting story. It's just, it leads into the thing. Like, we were all, like, it was during, like, the World Cup summer
after. The most recent one?
The most recent one. And, I don't know, we would always go watch the games at Charlie's house because, I don't know, Charlie's family's very into soccer. And so... Chris called me and he was like, what are you doing this afternoon? And I was like, oh, I'm probably going to Charlie's house to watch, like, the, you know, Portugal versus England or whatever game
was.
I
totally saw that game.
What?
I totally watched that game.
And he was like, okay. And so I, like, didn't go. Like, it was just, like, other stuff came up. And Chris calls me. He's like, what the hell, man? I'm at Charlie's house. Like, you lied to me. And I was like, no, I didn't. I just said I was going to come. Like, I didn't, like... Within a lie, there is, like, an intent to deceive, you know? Like, there's a difference between misinformation or, are, like, misinforming you and like, deceiving you. Like, I wasn't, like, trying to trap you, and I was like, I have to get Chris to Charlie's house, and then all hell will break loose, and I will laugh diabolically from my house. It was just, you know, like, and he was like, no, and we had this big argument, we looked it up in, like, the OED, and, we're very dorky, I'm sorry, and, the first definition was, like, to mislead, or to give information with the intent to deceive, but then the second one is to just give misinformation, so we, like, both were just like, I'm right, and he was like, no, I'm right, and I don't know, and I was like, Chris, if I get, like, a question wrong in math class, like, if you ask me, like, what's, like, 8 times 8, and I say, like, 22, I didn't lie to you, like, I'm not, like, like, Mr. Jones isn't like, you lied, you know, like, like, all over my test, it's like, liar.
But teachers should, I think that would be so entertaining. But, no, that's a question, like, I think in literature all the time, they have characters who don't necessarily lie, but they are deceitful.
Well, that's the issue of deceit, like, as in, like, withholding information or implying certain things.
I think that's a big one, like, the lie by omission.
Yeah, lie by omission.
You see, I feel like deceit is the same thing as lying, like...
I think so, too. I think misinformation is a different category, yeah. But I think deceit is the same thing as lying.
Well, but even... So, like, when my mom started dating my dad, technically she had, like, a long-term boyfriend who she had already decided to break up with, but didn't want to break up with him before exams. So, like, is she really going to tell my dad?
That's a lie.
It's a good lie.
I mean, okay, fine. The omission of,
like, are you going to tell him the first day, like, actually I have a long-term boyfriend? I mean, like, it's, like, way too complicated and too much information, and, like, he was away in law school, so, like, he wasn't really interfering.
I mean, you're going to scare a guy off.
Right.
No, I guess that's not lying, because if he had, it's like a technicality, like, if he had asked her, do you have a boyfriend?
What's the sin of omission?
But,
yeah.
But who's going to be, like, on your first date, so do you have a boyfriend?
Yeah, no, I agree.
My mom had a boyfriend too when she started dating my dad, so I can't wait to start dating the next guy so that I can be my husband.
So did she lie about it, or was she just like, hey, Steve?
Well, I think my dad knew, but I think the other guy didn't, because my mom and my dad would go out on Thursday nights, and she'd go out with the other guy on Friday nights, until she, like, sorted it all out. So I think my dad did know, but I don't think the other guy knew. But she'd already decided she was going to break up with him too. It was just, like, they've been dating for, like, 3 or 4 years, so she had to, like, figure out, like, a nice way to do that.
But there's something weird that the strength for the argument of lying is so strong versus the strength of, like, telling the truth, but there's something about it that you would want to hear the truth, right? And you would hope that your significant other would tell you the truth. Yet the argument for lying about it is so... It's
compelling.
Yeah, it's compelling. You're like, yes, I am being selfish, but what about truth makes it so... Why do you feel the need to tell the truth?
I mean, I think there is some, like, cachet of, like, oh, we're always honest with each other, or, you know, there is something, like, our culture creates some, like, idealized version of, like, oh, we can tell each other anything.
On, like, a person-to-person level, but, like, are we actually honest in, like, a international thing? Like, you know, like, we're not. I mean,
like, foreign policy?
Yeah, like, foreign policy. Like, if honesty is the best policy, you know. Honesty is certainly not the best foreign policy.
Nor is it necessarily the best one-on-one policy. There are certain things that people don't... I mean, I don't know, I think there's a distinction between something someone needs to know because it directly affects them. So if you're engaged to someone and they cheat on you, like, that does pretty much directly affect you. But let's say you're engaged to someone who, like, before they met you, like, you know, had another girlfriend who they really like. I mean, there's, like, no need to, like, go into all those details about something that, like, in theory doesn't really affect you, you know? Okay, I think there's a difference.
For our final selection, we have Shakespeare's Sonnet 138.
When my love swears that she is made of truth, I do believe her, though I know she lies, that she might think me some untutored youth, unlearned in the world's false subtleties.
Thus vainly thinking that she thinks me young, although she knows my days are past the best, simply I credit her false-speaking tongue. On both sides thus is simple truth suppressed.
But wherefore says she not she is unjust, and wherefore say not I that I am old? O, love's best habit is in seeming trust, and age in love loves not to have years told.
Therefore I lie with her and she with me, and in our faults by lies we flattered be.
10 years ago, on a cold dark night, someone was killed beneath the town hall light. Just a few at the scene, and they all did agree that the man who ran looked a lot like me. Judge said, son, what is your alibi? If you were somewhere else, then you don't have to die. I spoke not a word, though it meant my life, for I'd been in the arms of my best friend's wife.
She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave where the night winds wail. Nobody knows, Lord, nobody sees, nobody knows but me.
Scaffold is high and eternity nears. She stands in the crowd and sheds not a tear. But sometimes at night when the cold wind moans in a long black veil, she cries all over my bones.
Walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave where the night winds wail. Nobody knows, Lord, nobody sees, nobody knows.
That was Long Black Veil by Tangled Up in Blue. Thank you for joining us this week for the Radley Porch on WYBC 1340. Join us the same time and same place next week as we talk about strangers.